Picture this. It is 7 in the morning. You're doing pre-flight. You swing through the cockpit check and you notice the fuel gauge for the left tank is pegged, needle pinned at 0. You know the airplane was just fueled last night. You can stick your head up through the fuel cap and see the blue stuff sitting right there, full to the neck. But the gauge? Dead? Do you fly? I'm pattern on traffic pattern, here on radio hangar. And the answer to that question is in a regulation that every student memorizes the week before their written test and quietly lets fade after the ink dries on the temporary certificate. Today, we are bringing it back. Federal Aviation Regulation 91205, required instruments and equipment for general aviation aircraft. This regulation is not just a test question. It is the legal definition of whether your airplane is airworthy on any given morning. And if your airplane does not meet it, you are not legal to fly full stop. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They have got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. aviationsoul.com. Let's walk through this together. FAR 91205 is organized in two tiers. What your airplane needs for day visual flight rules, and what it additionally needs for night visual flight rules. Most instructors teach the day list using the mnemonic A Tomato Flames. 14 letters, 14 items, and I want to go through each one not just as a memorization exercise, but as a reason. Because every item on this list is there for a purpose. And when you understand the purpose, you remember it for life instead of just for the written. The first A is airspeed indicator. You need to know how fast you're going. This one is intuitive. T is tachometer, one for each engine. Your RPM gauge, for most training aircraft, you have one engine, one tack. But the language says for each engine, which matters if you ever find yourself in a twin. O is oil pressure gauge, one for each engine that uses a pressure system. The oil pressure gauge is your engine's first warning system. A drop or a zero reading at run-up is one of the few things that should absolutely stop you from pushing the throttle forward. M is magnetic compass, and here's where I want to slow down, because this one is more important than most people give it credit for. The magnetic compass is the only navigation instrument on the required list that needs zero electrical power to function. Everything else on your panel, the attitude indicator, if it is electrically driven, the heading indicator, the GPS, the comm radios, all of it can fail if the alternator quits and the battery runs down. The wet compass on the windshield keeps working. The FAA requires it for exactly that reason. It is your last resort heading reference in a dark cockpit over terrain at night. Understanding how it behaves, the northerly turning errors, the acceleration and deceleration errors, is not just a check ride requirement, it is a genuine survival skill that pays off the day your panel goes quiet. The next A is altimeter. You need to know how high you are required. Then T again, temperature gauge. This one comes with a qualifier. It is required for each liquid-cooled engine. Most of us fly air-cooled Lycumings and Continentals, so this line does not apply. But if you're flying an older aircraft with a liquid-cooled power plant, pay attention to it. O is oil temperature gauge, and here is where students sometimes tangle themselves up on the check ride. The temperature gauge for liquid-cooled engines and the oil temperature gauge for air-cooled engines are two separate items covering two different cooling architectures. You need one or the other based on what is under your cowling. You do not need both, you need the right one. F is fuel gauge, indicating the quantity of fuel in each tank in use, not a fuel gauge. Each tank in use, that is the phrasing the regulation uses, and that phrasing matters. If your Cessna 172 has two tanks and the gauge for the right tank is broken, you have a problem. We are coming back to that. L is landing gear position indicator, only required if the aircraft has retractable landing gear. Fixed gear Cessna 152. Fixed gear Piper Cherokee. Skip this one. Retractable gear Mooney, Bonanza, Piper Arrow. You need to be able to positively confirm where those wheels are. The gear warning horn on most retractables counts towards satisfying this requirement, but the point is you need some way of knowing gear position before you touch down. The next A is anti-collision light. Here is a date worth knowing. For aircraft manufactured after March 1, 1996, an anti-collision light system is required for all flights, day visual flight rules included. That means your rotating beacon or your strobe system. If your airplane rolled off the line after that date and the beacon is dead, you have a squawk that needs to be addressed before flight. Aircraft manufactured before that date were grandfathered. But check your specific aircraft, because some older airplanes had anti-collision lights added after the fact and noted in the logbooks. And once that equipment is listed as required, it is required. M is manifold pressure gauge. required only for altitude engines. An altitude engine is a supercharged or turbocharged power plant. Your standard naturally aspirated engine does not require a manifold pressure gauge under this regulation. If you're flying a turbocharged Cessna 210 or a turbonormalized aircraft, that gauge is on the required list. E is ELT, Emergency Locator Transmitter, and this is where students get caught off guard on check rides and in real life. FAR 91.205 references ELT as required equipment, but the actual ELT requirements live in their own regulation, 91.207. That regulation has some details that pilots overlook to their own detriment. Here is what 91.207 says that gets people in trouble. The ELT battery, not the unit itself, the battery must be replaced or recharged after the transmitter has been in cumulative use for more than 1 hour. And it must be replaced when 50% of its useful battery life, determined by the manufacturer, has been consumed. There is also a 12-month inspection requirement. When was the last time someone inspected your ELT? If you do not know the answer, go find the maintenance logbook right after this and look for the stamp. Because flying with an expired ELT battery or a unit that has not been inspected in more than 12 calendar months means your aircraft is not airworthy. And if you ever actually need that ELT, you want to know with complete confidence that it will work. S is safety belts required for all occupants. And there is a distinction here worth knowing. For aircraft manufactured after July 18, 1978, shoulder harnesses are required for the pilot and front seat occupants in addition to lap belts. If you are flying a newer aircraft, both the lap belt and the shoulder harness are required equipment and both must be serviceable. This is not a small thing. The data on what a properly worn shoulder harness does in a deceleration event is compelling. It keeps people alive in accidents that would otherwise be fatal. That is the day visual flight rules list. Night visual flight rules adds to the day list. The common acronym for the additional items is FLAPS. F is fuses, one spare set or three spare fuses of each kind required for the aircraft, and they must be accessible to the pilot in flight. Not in the baggage compartment, not in your flight bag sitting on the ramp. In the airplane, reachable from the seat, worth checking. L is landing light, required only if the aircraft is operated for hire. If you are a private pilot flying your own airplane on a night cross country, the landing light is technically not a regulatory requirement under this rule. That said, using your landing light on final and while taxiing at night is so obviously the right call from a safety perspective that I would argue the regulation almost misses the point on this one. Deer on the runway are real. Taxiway confusion at a dark, unfamiliar airport is real. Turn the landing light on. A FLAPS is anti-collision light, which is already in the day list. P is position lights. Your navigation lights, red on the left wing, green on the right wing, white on the tail. These are absolutely required for night flight, and they are a separate item from the anti-collision system. You need both operating for a legal night flight. S is source of power. An adequate electrical power source for all required electrical and radio equipment. If your alternator is out and you're running on battery alone, you need to think hard about whether you have enough electrical capacity to fly the night flight you're planning, especially if you're instrument rated and might pick up an instrument clearance along the way. Now, here's the practical part of all of this. Where the regulation actually bites people, go back to that fuel gauge scenario from the opening. You have a Cessna 172 with two wing tanks. Left tank gauge is stuck at zero. You know it is full because you watch them fuel it and you can visually confirm the level at the cap. Can you go? The answer is no. Under 91.205, fuel gauges showing quantity for each tank in use are required equipment. If that gauge is inoperative, the aircraft is not airworthy. But now say instead the cabin overhead light is burned out. Can you go on a day VFR flight? Yes, probably, because a cabin light is not on the required equipment list under 91.205. You would need to placard it as inoperative and make a maintenance logbook entry, which is part of the inoperative equipment process under 91.213. That regulation says that for aircraft operating without a minimum equipment list, which is most general aviation airplanes, you can defer inoperative equipment as long as it is not required by the applicable operating rules, not required by an airworthiness directive or type certificate datasheet, removed or deactivated, and placarded inoperative in plain sight of the pilot. The fuel gauge does not qualify for deferral. The cabin light does. The examiner on your check ride is going to test this exact distinction. They may hand you a scenario where the airplane has a broken piece of equipment and ask you to make a go or no-go decision. They are not looking for you to recite the list from memory. They are looking for you to reason through it. Which list is this on? Is there an airworthiness directive? Can I defer it? What does the placard requirement look like? That reasoning process is what the airman certification standards are actually asking for. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. FAR 91.205 is a minimum standard. It tells you the regulatory floor. Your specific aircraft may have additional requirements on top of that floor. The type certificate data sheet for your airplane, the approved flight manual or pilot's operating handbook, and any applicable airworthiness directives can all add requirements that you are obligated to meet. So after you have verified that your airplane meets 91.205, the next step is to confirm that it also meets everything specific to that aircraft's make and model. That is why the POH and the maintenance logbooks are part of pre-flight, not just the physical walk-around. And ultimately, the airworthiness determination rests with the pilot in command. The annual inspection is signed off by a mechanic, which is required every 12 calendar months under a separate regulation. But on any given day, the call that the airplane is airworthy and legal to fly is yours. That is both the authority and the responsibility that comes with the certificate in your wallet. Here's the reason I want you to take this regulation seriously beyond the check ride. Every item on the A Tomato Flames list is there because of what happens when aircraft fly without it. The magnetic compass requirement exists because pilots lost control and orientation when their electrical instruments failed and had nothing to fall back on. The ELT requirement exists because search and rescue teams spent days looking for aircraft they could have found in hours if a working transmitter had been on board. The shoulder harness requirement exists because engineers and accident investigators looked at survivable crashes and saw people who should have walked away, and they did not, because the deceleration forces drove them into the panel. These regulations are not bureaucratic nuisance. They are the institutional memory of hard lessons, written down so that the next generation of pilots does not have to learn them the same way the last generation did. FAR 91.205. 14 items for day. Add flaps for night. And if any one of them is not working, you find out why before you leave the ground. Information here comes from the Federal Aviation Regulations themselves and the FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. Find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Check the ELT log before your next flight. You might be surprised what you find.